The date was July 1994, and the place was Port Coquitlam, B.C. Jess and I had just spent the last 2 days driving in my 1974 Volkswagen Rabbit from Winnipeg all the way to Port Coquitlam, and we had arrived at my friend's house. We were there for a wedding. However, the last 2 hours of our trip were a bit of a white-knuckled drive as my beautiful car began to do a lot of this, shaking as we went down the highway. There seemed to be that sweet spot of speed of about 95 kilometers an hour. Anything more and it shook like crazy. Anything less and it was not good either. We had finally gotten there and we were tired. I think I had spent 2 hours praying that my car would not fall apart on the highway. And so the next morning I found out that my friend's father was he was a car guy. And he loved to restore old vehicles. So the two of us, we pulled my car into his shop, this beautiful shop that he had. He pulled out the floor jack and proceeded to lift it up. After talking about it, we kind of thought it might be a wheel bearing. He lifted up the car, and the passenger rear tire just fell off. Yes, it was a wheel bearing. There was nothing left of it. After a quick examination, we determined that we ran to the local auto parts store. After purchasing wheel bearing and a tub of axle grease, it took us about 30 minutes to put it all back together. And thankfully, there was someone with the knowledge and the equipment and the willingness to help get my car back on the road safe and sound for the long trip back to Winnipeg after the wedding. Well, today we are going to see how God got the attention of some people before they took a long road trip. We'll see how he accomplished his will and his ways for his glory and the spread of the gospel to the Gentiles. Today is also Pentecost, and I want to remind us of the gospel going to so many different nations on that day. God's intention was always to bring the gospel to all people, regardless of race. So if you've got your Bibles, turn to Acts chapter 10, and we will see his sovereign sense of timing on full display. The main characters are Cornelius, a Roman officer, and Peter, a Jew, one of the 12 apostles. And this is a groundbreaking chapter in the history of the church. It is a crucial turning point for the advancement of the gospel. See, two main points will emerge from the text which we can apply to our context. First, we are going to see that we need an attitude adjustment. God orchestrates these events to bring these two men together by breaking down barriers of prejudice between them. We're introduced to the first character in verse 1. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. Now, Caesarea was this beautiful seaport, the home of the governor, along with many members of the Roman military. The city was named after Caesar Augustus, and it was a place that the Jews denounced for its immorality and its idolatry. Cornelius was a high-ranking military officer in charge of 100 men. And incidentally, when we look at the scriptures, centurions are always depicted in a positive light. Think about it. There was a centurion at the cross as well. Anyways, putting that aside, verse 2 says, he and his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. We just saw four character traits about Cornelius. He was devout. He was a devout man. This means that he was reverent. He feared God. This was not just a description of his character. The title God-fearer was given to those who worshipped with the Jews in the synagogue, but had not been circumcised. Basically, he was a Gentile who worshipped the Jewish God. He was a convert to Judaism. He was a moral man, but not yet a saved man. God-fearers were not full converts, but had left their idolatrous ways. The third thing I noticed is that we learn that he was generous. He gave to those in need. This reminds me of Tabitha, who was full of good works and acts of charity. Well, so was Cornelius. And finally, we see that he prayed continually. He not only gave gifts to others, but also gazed towards heaven as he offered his prayers to God throughout the day. Cornelius is a good man. And one day, at about 3 p.m, he had a vision. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, "Cornelius." Cornelius stared at him in fear. "What is it, Lord?" he asked. The angel answered, "Your prayers and your gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God." He saw an angel, and he couldn't look away. He was filled with fear, but responded with faith. A faith-filled question: "What is it, Lord?" His eager response is similar to how a young Samuel replied to the Lord in 1 Samuel 3. Then the Lord called Samuel and said, and he said, "Here I am." Let me ask you this morning, have you ever said, "Here I am"? What is it, Lord? And the angel tells Cornelius, "Your prayers and your gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God." Like the fragrant offering, his prayers and his giving were like a sweet incense to God. "Now send men to Joppa. Bring back a man named Simon who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea." Now Joppa is about 50 kilometers away. It's modern day Tel Aviv, and it's where Peter raised Dorcas from the dead. Peter is staying in the house of Simon by the sea. And don't you just love how specific God is? A tanner's house needs to be by the sea because it would need the seawater to do his work. And these men would have no trouble finding it with all the racks of animal skins just sunning. When the angel who had spoke to him had gone, Cornelius called two of his servants and of devout soldier who was one of his attendants, and he told them everything that had happened and sent them to Joppa. Now this phrase, "told them everything," is the word exegesis, and it means that he explained everything by bringing out the meaning without reserve. He didn't hold back anything. He told them the whole story. He explained what he wanted. It's good exegesis. It's the type of preaching that I am committed to do. And it's interesting that God could have sent Philip to Cornelius, because Philip was living in Caesarea at the time. But in his sovereignty, the Lord wanted Peter because he was a key leader of the church. And God used Peter to unlock 3 doors for the gospel proclamation. among three different groups, the Jews in Acts chapter 2, the Samaritans in Acts chapter 8, and the Gentiles in Acts chapter 10. Having prepared Cornelius to hear the gospel, God has now prepared Peter to go and explain the gospel to a hated Gentile. But for that to happen, God had to deal with a huge attitude issue that Peter had. It would be difficult for Peter to turn this key to unlock this last door. Look at verse 9. About noon the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on the roof to pray. Now, I don't like my kids on my roof. But back in the day, in those days, houses had flat roofs, which people used for recreation, for rest, for reflection, because it was often cool and quiet. And Peter is praying at noon following the admonition of Psalm 55. Evening and morning and at noon I utter my complaints and I moan and he hears my voice. So Peter is up on the roof at noon praying. And because it's noon, he became hungry and wanted something to eat. While the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance as he smelled the aroma of fresh falafel and hot buttered bagels. He fell into a trance. And he saw heaven open and something like a large sheet being let down to the earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals as well as reptiles of the earth and birds of the air. And as he continued to look, he saw something like this linen slowly descending from heaven. A cloud, but more sheet-like. It was a sheet of a mixture of all kinds of beasts and birds and bugs. This means that they were clean and unclean animals all jumbled together. And now Peter was raised only to eat what was considered ceremonial clean and kosher. He would have been absolutely repulsed by all the unclean animals touching the clean ones. Abstaining from unclean animals was part of the Jewish heritage and the identity to eat these things was just wrong. I'm sure he wasn't expecting this. Then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." He's horrified and is saying something like, "No way." Or more literally, "I shall not do this, Lord." And yet, he calls God Lord. You should not say no, Lord. That's a phrase that just shouldn't exist. And this passage makes me happy because it means that my mashed potatoes are so much better off with all these extra creatures beside them. Peter had kept the Old Testament dietary laws his entire life, and so this is really ruffling his feathers. And most of you know there's a story about this guy, and he's got this grandson. His name is Pip, and he's got a genetic disorder, and it doesn't allow him to eat anything with protein in it. And his parents work really, really hard to weigh out and carefully select all of his foods. Can you imagine doing that your entire life? Well, that's kind of what like Peter did, right? He had to very carefully select and read all, like they don't have the labels that we have and stuff like that, but he had to do all of these things. Peter believed that he could do serious damage to his spiritual life if he ate any unclean food because it symbolized God's people being set apart. That's how he viewed this. And there's this huge tension which existed between Jew and Gentile. And if Jews went into a Gentile country, they would shake the dust off of their feet before returning to Israel because Gentile dirt was just too dirty. It was defiled. If milk was drawn from a cow by a Gentile, Jews would not drink it. However, I love the graciousness of God and what he has with Peter in all of this. The voice spoke to him a second time. Do not call anything impure that God has made clean. This happened three times, and immediately the sheet was taken back into heaven. I think it's really difficult for us to grasp how big a deal this was for Peter. He had always followed the dietary laws. They were forbidden from eating camels, rock badgers, pigs. And now God was telling Peter he could eat a camel bacon cheeseburger because he has declared all foods clean. And I wonder if Peter remembered what Jesus said in Mark chapter 7. Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from the outside cannot defile him? Thus he declared all foods clean. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of this vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. And this word wondering means that he was in turmoil. He was greatly perplexed. He was in modern terms, his mind was blown. He was just, ah. This was a crossroads. It was a crossroad moment for Peter. And here we see God's sovereign timing once again. At the exact time Peter is perplexed, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate and asked if this was the place where Peter was staying. Peter needed some help processing all of this. And while Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, Simon, three men are looking for you. So get up and go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, for I have sent them. This phrase, do not hesitate, has the idea of making no distinction. In other words, these Gentiles who Peter would have considered unclean are not to be put in a separate category any longer. Don't hesitate, just go. This process was used by God to adjust Peter's prejudicial attitudes. And what we see next is God sovereignly aligning Peter's prescribed actions. God is preparing Cornelius for salvation while preparing Peter to get rid of his prejudice and bigotry towards Gentiles. God is always at work. Sometimes we get to see it, but when we don't, remember that God is always at work. And the next thing we must do is align our actions. God's timing is always perfect. And as Peter is pondering, he hears men pounding at the door and he exhibits immediate obedience. Peter went down and said to the men, I am the one you are looking for. Why have you come? The men replied, we have come from Cornelius, the centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man who is respected by all the Jewish people. A holy angel told him to have you come to his house so that he could hear what you have to say. I'm sure Peter linked his vision with what the angel had revealed to Cornelius. He didn't understand everything, but he obeyed anyways. And some of us want to wait until everything makes sense, until we have all of our questions answered before we obey God. But here's the principle to ponder. Understanding often comes after obedience. And that's what Jesus said to John, said in John 7, if anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God. Now in verse 23 in Acts, we see Peter beginning to let his prejudice go. Then Peter invited the men into the house to be his guest. Now, normally Jews would not invite Gentiles into their homes, and they would certainly not have had a meal with them, but Peter gives them a bed and some breakfast. And the next day, he headed to Caesarea with six brothers from Joppa that would serve as witnesses for accountability. And the following day, they arrived in Caesarea, and Cornelius was expecting them and had called together his relatives and all of his close friends. He was eager for his family and friends to hear the good news from Peter. Now the Jews believed they would become unclean if they ever entered a Gentile house. So the beginning of verse 25 is actually quite stunning. As Peter entered the house, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet in reverence. But Peter made him get up. "Stand up," he said. "I am only a man myself." The reverence here is, it literally means to throw kisses towards while lying prostrate. In Revelation 19, verse 10, John falls down at the feet of the angel to worship him, but was told, "You must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you." And Peter did that very same thing here. Peter was a servant, not a celebrity. He was not worthy of worship. "I'm a man myself." Talking with him, Peter went inside and found a large gathering of people. Now Peter is in a crowded room with them. There was no physical distancing going on. They're all in this room together, and Peter gives a brief statement about how the Almighty had adjusted his attitude and aligned his actions. He said to them, "You are well aware that it is against our law for a Jew to associate with a Gentile or to visit him. But God has shown me that I should not call any man impure or unclean. So when I was sent for, I came without raising any objection. May I ask why you sent for me?" Now I want to point out, it's technically not unlawful for a Jew to associate with Gentiles. You see, Peter had followed the legalistic rabbinical laws, which went beyond what Scripture teaches. We know that Peter's prejudice was pulverized and his attitude was adjusted because he was able to declare, "God has shown me that I should not call any man impure or unclean." It's amazing, isn't it? That Peter, the vision that Peter had was of unclean food, but he made the application into much bigger categories of people. And then Cornelius answers Peter's question by explaining his encounter with the angel and how he was told to send for Peter. And he expressed his eagerness to hear what Peter had to say about the glories of the gospel. And verse 33 says this: "Now we are all here in the presence of God to listen to everything the Lord has commanded you to tell us." Do you love to hear all that God has said? I encourage you to finish this chapter on your own today. I'll finish it next week, but God is always at work. And sometimes we get to see it, and when we don't, we need to remember that He's always working. But before we close today, I want to encourage you. Do you need to deal with any prejudices or racism in your heart? And this word prejudice means to prejudge. It's wrong to divide people according to race. I believe that there is only one race, the human race. And it seems like the news has two main categories these days. You've got COVID and you've got racism. Seems like that's all that fills the news these days. But I feel that our passage is clear. There is no place for racism in the church. God moves when His people practice spiritual disciplines. In verse 2, Cornelius was praying. In verse 9, Peter was praying. Also, Cornelius was a giver, and he gave generously. And when we put God first and ourselves in a position to hear from Him, He will speak through His word. And when He does, we need to practice immediate obedience, because God is always at work, wanting to adjust our attitudes and align our actions with His will. Cornelius was eager to have people hear the gospel message, so he invited everyone over. We see all of these spiritual disciplines within this passage, and we need to practice them as well. God is preparing you to go with the message of the gospel, and He's already preparing others to hear it from you. Will you obey? Will you surrender your will to His will? And when you do, amazing things are going to happen. Amazing things. Because no matter what you are thinking, no matter what fear or what barrier you want to put up, what excuse you want to use, let me tell you this: our God is greater. Our God is way greater. The scriptures tell us that, but why don't I let the worship team lead us in our closing song?